Welcome to the Deep Dive, your ultimate shortcut to becoming truly well-informed on fascinating topics drawn straight from the source material you provide. We take that stack of articles, research papers, your personal notes, whatever you've got, and together we extract the absolute most important insights, add essential context, and maybe even sneak in a little bit of fun along the way.
Think of us as your expert navigators. The information landscape can be pretty dense, right? But we're here to guide you through it, helping you pinpoint the key nuggets of knowledge and understand their real-world significance.
Exactly. And for this particular deep dive, we're shifting gears a bit, literally, and focusing on the automotive world. We're going to take a deep dive into a significant and actually somewhat complex recent recall involving one of Ford's most popular vehicles, the Explorer SUV.
Right. The Explorer. Very common vehicle.
Yeah, you see them everywhere. You shared an article detailing the specifics of this recall, and our mission today is pretty clear. We're going to unpack everything about this recall, you know, what the issue is, how it was discovered, who exactly it affects, and crucially, what it means for you, whether you happen to own one of the vehicles in question, or if you're just interested in the often hidden mechanisms behind automotive safety and quality control.
It's a really compelling case study, actually, because it involves a seemingly minor part, something you might walk past on your own car every day without even noticing.
Right.
But the story of its journey from, let's say, a known minor issue to a massive recall and the sheer scale of that recall, we're talking nearly 500,000 vehicles, it really highlights just how interconnected design, manufacturing, regulatory oversight, and even consumer reporting truly are in the whole automotive safety ecosystem.
Absolutely. It's definitely more than just a part falling off. There's a whole process, a whole story behind how these things are found and addressed. Okay, so let's properly unpack this. First things first, let's get specific about the vehicles involved. Which Ford Explorer models are we actually talking about here?
Okay, so based on the source material you provided, the recall specifically targets the 2016 and 2017 model year Ford Explorer SUVs.
16 and 17.
Yeah, it's really important to emphasize those exact years, not earlier, not later models. Specifically, vehicles produced as 2016 and 2017 models.
Got it. So if you've got, say, a 2018 or a 2015 Explorer, you're not affected by this particular recall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what is the problematic part on these specific vehicles?
The issue centers on the exterior B-pillar door trim.
The B-pillar. Okay, for our listeners maybe picturing their own car right now, where exactly is that located?
Right. So the B-pillar is it's a structural pillar in the body of the vehicle. If you look at an SUV, or most cars really from the side, you have the A-pillar, which holds the windshield. Then the B-pillar is that vertical support right there between the front door and the rear door.
Okay.
It's usually where the front door latch is closed and often where the seat belt is mounted up high. So this trim we're talking about is the cosmetic, maybe slightly aerodynamic piece on the outside of that specific pillar.
Okay, gotcha. So it's that black or sometimes body-colored trim piece on the outside, right between the front and rear doors. And the problem, according to this source, what's happening with it?
Well, the problem is that this exterior B-pillar trim piece might become loose over time. And more significantly, from a safety point of view, it could potentially detach completely from the vehicle.
Detach completely.
Yes, detach completely while the vehicle is being driven. And the source is specific that this affects the trim on both the driver's side and the front passenger side doors.
Detaching while driving. Yeah, that definitely sounds like something you wouldn't want to happen.
Yeah.
But the source reveals a really interesting twist early on here. It mentions that Ford initially didn't classify this specific issue as an unreasonable risk to safety way back in 2019.
That's a crucial detail, yeah. It's provided right there in the source, and it's really key to understanding the timeline, which I know we'll get into. When Ford first looked at issues related to this trim back in 2019, their stated reasoning, according to the source, for not considering it an unreasonable safety risk was based on the low-mass geometry of the part.
Low-mass and geometry.
Okay. Essentially, they assessed the physical characteristics of the trim piece, you know, its size, its weight, its shape, and they concluded that by itself, it wasn't heavy enough or large enough to pose a significant danger if it were to come off.
Which, you know, initially, that feels sort of intuitive. You picture maybe a small piece of plastic trim and think, okay, maybe it's annoying if it falls off, maybe it looks bad, but is it really dangerous?
Right, exactly. It's not like, you know, a wheel flying off or your brakes failing. Yeah. Nothing that dramatic. However, and this is where it gets really interesting and where perspective maybe shifts. Automotive safety regulators and engineers, too, they have to consider the context in which something detaches.
Ah, the context, meaning
Meaning, a small, low-mass object sitting still on the ground is, well, harmless. But that same object detaching from a vehicle traveling at highway speeds, let's say 60, 70 miles per hour, maybe more, that's a completely different scenario.
Ah, okay, because the speed gives it energy, right?
Precisely. Velocity. That seemingly harmless low-mass piece suddenly has considerable kinetic energy. If it detaches at speed, it basically becomes a projectile.
Mm-hmm.
It could potentially strike the windshield or the bodywork of another vehicle traveling behind or nearby. And even if it doesn't cause direct injury within the striking vehicle, you know, breaking glass or something, it could easily obstruct a driver's vision momentarily, or worse, cause them to react suddenly to swerve, maybe brake hard unnecessarily.
Which could lead to a secondary collision.
Yeah, exactly. Potentially leading to a collision with another vehicle or even running off the road. And, you know, while maybe less likely at highway speeds, a piece flying off could theoretically pose some risk to pedestrians or cyclists too, perhaps more at lower speeds in urban areas. The key takeaway, really, from what the source implies here is that while Ford initially focused on the part's mass, the potential for it to create an unexpected obstacle or projectile while the car is in motion is what ultimately elevates it to a potential safety risk, at least in the eyes of regulators and eventually Ford itself, leading to this recall.
Okay, that distinction is critical. It's not just the object itself. It's the object in motion becoming a potential road hazard. So for anyone listening who drives a 2016 or 2017 Explorer, understanding that this specific exterior B-pillar trim piece, the one between the front and back doors, is the potential issue. That's the first most fundamental piece of information from this deep dive.
Absolutely. Knowing exactly what the problem is helps you understand the recall notification when or if it arrives in your mail.
Okay. Now let's move into the timeline. How did this issue come to light and eventually evolve into this, you know, pretty major recall? Because as we touched on, this wasn't exactly a sudden discovery, according to the source. Ford actually had some awareness of issues with this trim going back several years.
That's right. The source material indicates that Ford's awareness of a problem, or at least a problem related to loose B-pillar trim, dates all the way back to July 2019.
Okay.
But at that time, they didn't issue a safety recall. Instead, what they did was publish something called a technical service bulletin, which is often known just as a TSB.
Right, a TSB. Now, can you just quickly clarify for us what a TSB is and maybe how it differs from a full safety recall?
Sure. A TSB is essentially a communication from the car manufacturer, like Ford, to its network of franchise dealerships, the service departments. It's basically a document that describes a common problem that owners might be reporting or technicians are seeing. It provides a diagnostic procedure to help them identify the cause, and then it offers a recommended repair procedure. TSBs are typically issued for issues that aren't considered critical safety defects or things that don't relate to emission standards. They're more about helping dealership service departments fix known problems efficiently and consistently.
So it's like a heads up to the dealers. Hey, you might see this issue. Here's how to fix it properly.
Pretty much, yeah. It ensures technicians are aware of common issues and that they're using the manufacturer's approved method for addressing them. It's like a best practice guide for certain repairs.
Okay, so back in July 2019, Ford sends out this TSB to its dealers, instructing them on how to repair loose B-pillar door trim.
Correct. And the interesting thing the source notes is that this particular TSB actually covered a wider range of models than the eventual recall does. It applied to 2011 through 2019 Explorer models.
Wow. 2011 through 2019. That's a much bigger range.
It is. And the TSB itself, according to the source, described the problem's cause as a potential lack of adhesion of the front door upper molding to the door.
Lack of adhesion. So basically the glue wasn't holding well enough.
That's the gist of it, yes.
Okay, so back in 2019, Ford knew about adhesion issues causing this trim to be loose on Explorers going back several model years, and they told dealers how to fix it if a customer complained. Yet, the big safety recall for detachment only happens now, in 2025, and it focuses only on the 2016-2017 models. That's a pretty significant gap in time, and also a shift in how the issue is being framed from just loose trim to potential detachment hazard. How does the source explain that sort of evolution?
Well, the source explicitly links this back to Ford's initial assessment that we talked about just a minute ago. In 2019, when they issued that TSB, Ford's position was that this loose trim issue did not constitute an unreasonable risk to safety, again, citing the part's low mass geometry.
Right, the initial assessment.
And the source also mentioned something else interesting, that Ford had apparently had prior discussions with NHTSA back in 2018 about a different trim detachment topic on another vehicle, perhaps. And those discussions seemed to have maybe reinforced Ford's belief at the time that this specific B-pillar trim issue didn't rise to the level of a safety defect needing a full recall campaign.
Ah, okay. So from their perspective back then, it was seen more as a quality issue, maybe a durability issue, something to be fixed under warranty if it happened, addressed via the TSB for the dealers, but not quite a safety compliance matter requiring a recall.
That seems to be the picture painted by the source, yes.
Okay, so the critical difference initially was that classification of the problem.
Yeah.
Quality repair versus safety risk.
Yeah.
So what happened then? What changed between 2019 and 2025 to shift that classification and ultimately trigger this full recall?
This is where the role of consumers, and specifically the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, becomes absolutely pivotal in the story. According to the source you provided, the real turning point occurred on March 24th of this year, 2025.
March 24th, 2025. What happened then?
On that date, NHTSA's Office of Defect Investigations, or ODI, formally notified Ford about concerns they had regarding this B-pillar trim.
Okay, so NHTSA reached out officially.
Yeah.
And what prompted them to do that? What evidence did they have?
They had received a specific number of complaints directly from vehicle owners. The source states NHTSA had accumulated 38 vehicle owner questionnaires, VOQs they're called.
VOQs.
These are basically direct reports filed by consumers with NHTSA whenever they experience something they believe is a potential safety-related issue with their vehicle. And these 38 particular VOQs were very specific. They were about the driver and or passenger front door B-pillar trim partially or fully detaching while driving. And critically, they were specifically on 2016-2017 model year Explorers.
38 complaints. Now that number, 38, it seems, I don't know, relatively small when you think about the nearly 500,000 vehicles being recalled now. How could just 38 complaints trigger formal regulatory action and ultimately lead to such a massive recall?
That's a really insightful question, and it actually highlights something really important about how this whole safety system is supposed to work. While 38 might sound small in isolation in the context of potential safety defects, it can be quite significant. Especially when it correlates to an issue the manufacturer, like Ford here, already had some awareness of, even if just through a TSB.
So the TSB history mattered too.
It likely did. NHTSA looks for patterns. A cluster of complaints, even if it's a small number, initially describing the same specific problem, like detachment while driving, on the same specific part, the B-pillar trim, on the same specific model years, 2016, 2017, that acts as a potential red flag for them.
Right. It suggests it's not just random chance.
Exactly. It suggests this isn't just isolated incidents or maybe random road damage, but potentially a systemic issue, perhaps tied to manufacturing or design during that period. Those 38 reports, apparently, provided enough specific, consistent data points for NHTSA's Office of Defect Investigations to say, okay, this looks like a trend. This warrants bringing to Ford's attention officially. We need you guys to investigate if this is indeed a safety defect.
Wow.
It really underscores the power and, frankly, the importance of individual vehicle owners taking the time to file a VOQ with NHTSA when they experience something that feels like a genuine safety concern. Your report, your experience, can genuinely contribute to triggering a larger investigation.
That's actually a pretty powerful demonstration of consumer impact on safety.
Yeah.
Okay, so NHTSA gets these 38 specific reports. They see a pattern. They notify Ford officially on March 24th, 2025. What does Ford do then? Do they push back?
No. The source indicates Ford's internal process kicked into high gear pretty much immediately. Their Critical Concern Review Group, or CCRG.
CCRG.
Okay. They open an investigation into this specific issue the very next day, March 25th.
The next day. Okay, they took it seriously. Critical Concern Review Group. That name certainly implies this. This is a pretty serious internal body tasked with looking into significant issues. What did their investigation actually involve? How did they look into this, according to the source?
Well, the investigation, as it's detailed in the article you shared, ran from April through May of 2025. So a focus period. It involved the CCRG working closely with Ford's own body exterior engineering team.
Makes sense.
And they employed several methods to really try and understand the root cause and the potential scope of the problem. One method mentioned in the source is quite hands-on and maybe a bit surprising, actually. They went out and collected Explorer doors from scrapyards.
From scrapyards? That does sound a bit unusual. Why would they go digging through scrapyards to get doors?
It's actually a very practical, almost forensic approach to get real-world data. Think about it. Scrap yards have vehicles that have been driven for, you know, thousands, maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of miles. They've been exposed to all sorts of climates, different road conditions, vibrations, sun exposure.
Right, the real world.
Exactly. And they've potentially experienced the issue over a long period of time. By collecting doors from these vehicles, likely focusing on the affected 2016-2017 model years, Ford engineers could bring them back to their central labs facility for really detailed analysis. They could physically examine the B-pillar trim pieces that were still attached, maybe ones that were loose, look closely at the attachment points, analyze the adhesive application on parts that failed, and perhaps compare it to parts from similar vehicles where the trim was still holding strong.
I see.
It allows them to study the problem as it actually manifests in vehicles that have been out there in the field for years, not just looking at brand new parts off the assembly line or vehicles that are still relatively new.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. It's like doing failure analysis on components that have really experienced real-world stress and aging. What else did the investigation involve besides the scrapyard analysis? Did they look at other data?
Yes, the source also specifically notes they reviewed photos associated with warranty claims. Remember we talked about the TSB?
Yeah.
Well, Ford had also been aware of warranty claims related to loose trim going back years. So by examining photographs that dealerships likely submitted alongside these warranty claims, the engineers could get visual evidence of exactly how the problem presented itself when customers brought their cars in for service. This provided another layer of data to help them understand the nature and the extent of the adhesion issue.
Okay, so they combined that physical, lab-based analysis of components from vehicles out in the wild, so to speak, with the documentary evidence, the photos from the warranty claims over the years. And what conclusion did this combined investigation ultimately reach? What did they decide was the root cause of the loose or detaching trim?
This is the key finding that came out of that investigation, according to the source. The investigation determined that the loose or detached trim was a direct result of improper application of the adhesive wet-out during the original assembly process back at the factory.
Okay, improper application of the adhesive wet-out. That's the technical term they landed on for the root cause. Can you maybe break down what adhesive wet-out means in simpler terms for us?
Sure. Think about when you're applying glue, like epoxy maybe, to two surfaces you want to bond together really strongly.
Uh-huh.
For the best, strongest bond, you want that liquid glue or adhesive to spread out evenly and make complete intimate contact across the entire area of both surfaces you're joining. Wet out basically refers to how well that liquid adhesive flows and covers or wets the surfaces it's supposed to bond. Good wet out means the adhesive has spread thoroughly, flowed into all the little crevices, creating a continuous uniform film that securely grips both materials.
Okay, so improper application of the adhesive wet out means that back on the assembly line during manufacturing, the adhesive just wasn't applied correctly. Or maybe it didn't spread out properly across the contact surfaces between the trim piece and the door panel, leading to a weak bond right from the start.
That's exactly it. It points directly to a specific flaw, a variability in the manufacturing process on the assembly line for those particular vehicles. Instead of getting that consistent, strong bond across the entire intended surface area, maybe there were areas with insufficient adhesive coverage, perhaps air bubbles got trapped, or maybe the adhesive just didn't spread consistently before it started to set.
Creating weak spots.
Precisely. Creating weak points in the bond. And that makes the trim piece susceptible to loosening or even detaching over time due to normal factors like vibration from driving, temperature swings between hot and cold, maybe even just air pressure building up against it at highway speeds. Eventually, those weak points give way, leading to the loose trim or the detachment reported by owners. It confirms it wasn't just random wear and tear, but a defect stemming directly from how the vehicle was originally put together during a specific production period.
Right. So the investigation nailed down the specific how and why a manufacturing error with the adhesive application on the line. So what was the next step? Once they reached this conclusion in May, what happened?
The source states that Ford's Field Review Committee formally approved the safety recall on May 16th, 2025. This committee is typically the final internal authority within an automaker like Ford that reviews the findings of these critical investigations and makes the official decision to actually initiate a safety recall campaign. That means notifying NHTSA officially and subsequently notifying all the affected vehicle owners.
Okay, so now we really see the full timeline laid out clearly in the source material. It starts with that initial awareness and the TSB back in 2019, focusing on loose trim issues. Then years later, you have this cluster of very specific consumer complaints about actual detachment during driving, specifically on the 16-17 models. That prompts NHTSA to step in and notify Ford in early 2025.
Right.
That notification triggers an immediate, focused investigation by Ford's internal team, using some pretty interesting methods like analyzing real-world parts from scrapyards and reviewing warranty claim photos. Mm-hmm. That investigation then identifies a very specific manufacturing defect, the improper adhesive wetout. And finally, within just days of that investigation concluding, the formal safety recall gets the green light from Ford's internal committee. It really shows a clear path from those consumer reports through regulatory action, deep engineering investigation, and finally to the official recall decision.
That's precisely the sequence that the source details. It really illustrates the layers of checks and balances in the system where consumer input, channeled through NHTSA, can escalate a known issue, maybe previously considered minor, into a mandated safety recall investigation if the pattern of failure suggests a potential risk.
Which brings us neatly to the sheer scale and scope of this recall. We know it affects the 2016 and 2017 Explorers. How many vehicles are we talking about in total?
This is where the numbers get pretty substantial. The recall covers over 492,000 Ford Explorer models.
Wow. Over 492,000. That's approaching 500,000 vehicles just in this one recall action.
Yeah, it's a significant number, mostly in the U.S., though the source focuses mainly on the U.S. market figures. It could potentially affect vehicles in other markets, too, depending on where Explorers from that production window were sold.
Okay, nearly 500,000 vehicles. And just to be absolutely clear again, these are only the 2016 and 2017 model years being recalled for this issue.
Yes. Based on the information in the source, the scope of this specific recall action, number 25V330, if you look it up, is limited to just those two model years, 2016 and 2017.
Now, the source includes a piece of data here that might seem a little counterintuitive when you first hear it. It states that, based on their investigation and analysis, Ford estimates that only about 4% of the recalled vehicles are actually believed to have this specific defect, the faulty adhesive application that could lead to detachment.
That's right. That 4% figure comes directly from the recall report that Ford submitted to NHTSA, which is often public information. And if you do the math, 4% of just over 492,000 vehicles comes out to roughly, 19,680 vehicles, something like that.
Right around 20,000 vehicles.
Yeah. So Ford's own estimate is that the actual number of vehicles produced with this specific manufacturing flaw is significantly smaller than the total number of vehicles being recalled.
Okay. So that begs the question.
Yeah.
Why recall all, nearly 500,000 vehicles if maybe only around 20,000 might actually have the problem? It seems like casting a really, really wide net.
Well, that's pretty standard operating procedure, actually, for safety recalls that stem from a manufacturing process defect like this one. When defect occurs during assembly, maybe a machine wasn't calibrated right for a shift, or a batch of adhesive was slightly off, or an operator missed a step. It's often practically impossible for the automaker to go back and identify exactly which individual vehicles, down to the VIN number, received that faulty application or were subject to the specific conditions that caused the defect, not without physically inspecting every single one, which isn't feasible.
Uh-oh.
The defect happened sometime within a defined time frame of production, which they link to that period between 2015 and 2017 before they improved the process. Therefore, the recall must cover the entire population of vehicles that were produced during that period when they were potentially susceptible. It's a necessary preventative step to ensure that any vehicle that might have the problem, even if it hasn't shown any symptoms yet, is included in the safety action and gets inspected or repaired. They simply can't risk missing a vehicle that does have the defect, even if the statistical probability for any given car is low, like that 4% suggests. The recall has to apply to the whole population potentially at risk due to how and when they were manufactured.
That makes total sense. It's a pragmatic approach driven by safety. You can't economically or practically test every single car on the road, so you recall the entire pool that could have been affected by that specific manufacturing issue during that window.
Precisely. You identify the susceptible manufacturing window and you recall the vehicles produced within it. That's the standard practice.
Now, the source also references the warranty claims related to this issue. How many claims was Ford actually aware of, and over what kind of period did those come in?
According to the source, Ford was aware of 1,482 warranty claims specifically concerning this B-pillar trim issue.
1,482.
And the source specifies that these claims were filed over a pretty long period, between December 4, 2015 and February 10, 2025.
Wow. That's a lengthy window. Okay. More than 9 years of claims coming in. And starting in late 2015, which would line up pretty well with the production ramp-up for the 2016 model year Explorers, wouldn't it?
Exactly. It shows that instances of loose or maybe even detached trim were being reported by customers and documented by dealerships through the standard warranty repair process for a considerable period leading up to this formal recall investigation. These claims serve as a really important, consistent data stream for automakers, highlighting issues that are actually occurring out there in the field. Which is why, as the source noted, they were such a valuable source of information, especially the photos, during the CCRG's investigation process.
Right. Reviewing those photos associated with those nearly 1,500 claims must have given the engineers a lot of visual evidence of how the problem manifested itself as experienced by actual customers and the technicians who fixed it.
Exactly. It helps connect the dots between the theoretical engineering analysis, the lab work, and the real-world manifestation of the problem out on the road.
Now, given that the core issue involves a part potentially detaching from a moving vehicle, which we've established is considered a potential safety hazard, the really obvious and important question is whether this issue has actually led to any accidents or, worse, injuries. What does the source say about that?
Yeah, that's crucial. And the source includes a very important piece of information here. It states that as of April 7th, 2025, which was during their investigation period, Floyd was not aware of any accidents or injuries that were directly related to instances of loose or detached B-pillar door trim stemming from this specific issue.
Okay, that is certainly good news, thankfully. So while the potential for harm exists, and that potential is recognized by NHTSA and is the reason for the recall, the source indicates that, based on Ford's records up to that date in April, this particular problem hasn't resulted in any reported crashes or physical harm to anyone.
That's what the source states, yes. It's an important data point. It shows that while the risk is deemed sufficient to warrant a safety action involving 500,000 vehicles, the reported consequences have, thankfully, not included accidents or injuries so far for this specific defect.
Let's just quickly revisit the manufacturing window mentioned in the source, because it really does reinforce the link to why specifically the 2016 and 2017 models are affected. The article notes that the specific trim park design was introduced into production back in June 2015.
Right.
And that Ford implemented assembly process improvements specifically aimed at better securing this part in April 2017.
And that time frame, June 2015 to April 2017, aligns almost perfectly with the production cycles for the 2016 and 2017 model year Explorers being the focus of this recall. The production of the 2016 models would have largely taken place between mid-2015 and mid-2016. Mm-hmm. The 2017 models would have then been produced mostly from mid-2016 up until mid-2017, right around when that process improvement was made in April 2017. So the manufacturing window before that adhesive application process improvement was implemented directly overlaps with the production period for the recalled 2016 and 2017 Explorers. Vehicles built within that specific window would be the ones potentially susceptible to that improper application of the adhesive wet out that the investigation identified.
It really paints a clear picture, doesn't it? The affected population is directly tied to a specific window in the manufacturing history where this adhesive issue was occurring before the assembly process itself was updated to fix it.
Precisely. The recall logically targets the vehicles produced during that identified period of vulnerability on the assembly line.
Okay, so we've covered the what, the who, the how it was discovered, and the scale.
Yeah.
Now we get to the really critical piece of information for affected owners. What's the remedy? What is Ford actually going to do to fix this problem, and what happens next for the owners of these nearly 500,000 vehicles?
This is another key detail from the source, and it's something owners really need to be very aware of right now. As of the article's publication date, which corresponds to the recall announcement timeframe, Ford currently does not have a ready-to-go remedy available for these nearly 500,000 recalled vehicles.
Okay, so they've identified the problem, they've approved the recall, notified NHTSA, but the actual fix isn't ready yet. Mm-hmm. So what should owners do in the meantime, and how will they even know when the fix is ready?
Yeah, it's a bit of a waiting game initially. The source is very specific about the notification process because the remedy isn't immediately available. Ford is planning to communicate with owners in two distinct stages, both via mail.
Two letters.
A first notification letter was scheduled to be mailed out to all registered owners by June 9th, 2025. The primary purpose of this first letter is simply to inform customers about the recall itself. It will explain the potential safety risk associated with the loose or potentially detaching trim and basically make them aware that a remedy is currently being developed.
Okay, so the first letter is essentially a heads up then. It's like, your vehicle is affected by this recall. Here's the potential problem. Please be aware and hang tight. We'll tell you what to do later.
That's pretty much the essence of it, yes. The goal is to ensure owners are aware of the issue and the potential risk as soon as reasonably possible after the recall is formally approved. Then a second letter will be mailed out at some later date. The source doesn't specify exactly when, but it will be sent once Ford has successfully developed the repair procedure, fully tested it, and made the actual repair procedure and any necessary parts available to their network of dealerships across the country.
Right. And why does it often take time to develop the fix after the recall is already approved? You might think they'd figure that out during the investigation phase.
It's a good question. Identifying the root cause of a problem, like the improper adhesive wetout, and then developing a robust, scalable, reliable, and officially approved repair procedure are often distinct phases, especially for a recall of this magnitude. The investigation phase, the CCRG work, focuses intensely on what exactly is wrong and why it's happening.
Finding the cause.
Exactly. Once the recall is approved based on that finding, the engineering teams then shift their focus to developing the solution. And this involves quite a few steps. They have to design a repair method that can be consistently and correctly performed by dealership technicians who might have varying levels of experience. They need to rigorously test that repair to make absolutely sure it's effective and crucially durable over the long term. You don't want it failing again. They might need to develop new tools for the technicians or even manufacture completely new or redesign parts if the original design or attachment method needs significant modification. Then they have to write up very detailed service instructions for the dealerships, get those approved, and then ensure that all the dealerships are properly trained on the new procedure and, critically, have the necessary parts and any special tools actually in stock.
Wow. Okay.
This entire process, from designing the fix to getting parts distributed and techs trained, takes time. Often several months after the recall is officially approved, they can't just issue a bulletin saying use more glue or clean it better. They need a very specific, validated, documented procedure for their technicians to follow consistently across hundreds or thousands of dealerships.
That makes a lot more sense when you lay it out like that. It's definitely not a simple quick fix. It's a whole logistical process of developing and then implementing a standardized repair procedure across a massive service network for potentially 500,000 vehicles.
Exactly. The logistics involved in actually rolling out a repair for that many vehicles are pretty complex.
So for you, the listener, if you own a 2016 or 2017 Ford Explorer, the key action right now, based on the source material we have, is really just to watch your physical mailbox for official communication directly from Ford Motor Company. That first letter should have arrived or be arriving around early June 2025, simply informing you about the recall. The second letter, when it eventually comes, will contain the really crucial details on exactly when and where you can take your vehicle to get the necessary repair performed, and importantly, it will be done free of charge to you. Don't rely just on news reports or social media for the definitive what to do. The official mailings from Ford are your primary source of truth for executing this recall.
That's absolutely the most important immediate takeaway for affected owners. Keep an eye out for those official letters. They are the gateway to getting the remedy when it's ready.
Now, stepping back just slightly before we wrap up, the source article also provided some broader context about recall activity happening within the auto industry this year, and it specifically highlighted Ford's position in that landscape.
Yes, it did give a kind of a industry snapshot, noting Ford's overall recall activity in 2025 up to the point the article was published.
And what were the numbers it provided? They seemed quite high.
They were substantial, yeah. The source stated that since January 1st, 2025, Ford had issued 69 separate recalls.
69.
Affecting a total of over 3.5 million vehicles.
Wow. 69 distinct recall campaigns impacting more than 3.5 million vehicles, all within just the first, 4 or 5 months of the year.
Yeah.
That is a really substantial number.
It is indeed. And the article specifically pointed out that, according to the data source it was referencing, this was reported as the highest number of recalls issued by any single automaker so far in 2025.
And the source provided a comparison point too, didn't it, for General Motors in the same time frame?
Yes. Just for context, it noted that General Motors, another major manufacturer, obviously, had issued 12 recalls during that same period.
Okay, so 69 recalls for Ford compared to 12 for GM in that same window. Now, the article just presented these numbers, right? It didn't really delve into why there might be such a difference or explore the broader implications beyond just stating the figures.
That's correct. The source just gives us that data point, Ford's high recall volume relative to GM in this specific period, without really analyzing the underlying reasons why that might be the case. You know, it could be due to any number of factors, differences in manufacturing volumes between the companies, the age or complexity of the vehicle fleets, the specific types of issues being discovered, maybe differences in internal reporting thresholds or how aggressively they pursue potential issues.
Okay, lots of possibilities.
Or other factors that just aren't discussed in the provided text. It primarily serves, I think, to show the sheer scale of safety and quality issues that automakers are constantly grappling with on a continuous basis. It helps place this one specific Explorer recall within that larger ongoing context of industry activity and the constant effort to identify and correct problems.
It certainly puts the nearly 500,000 vehicle Explorer recall into perspective, doesn't it? When you see it alongside Ford's own much larger year-to-date activity, which involves millions more vehicles spread across dozens of other separate recall actions.
It really does. Each recall, like this Explorer trim issue we've been discussing, has its own very specific cause, its own unique timeline, its own remedy. But when you look at these aggregate numbers, they really illustrate the constant challenge automakers face in identifying and correcting issues across their vast and complex fleets of vehicles out on the road.
Okay, so to wrap up this deep dive then, we've traced the really fascinating, if sometimes a bit delayed, journey of this particular Ford Explorer recall. It started way back with observations of loose exterior B-pillar trim, an issue Ford was aware of as early as 2019, and initially addressed with just a technical service bulletin for dealers, classifying it back then based on the part's low mass as not constituting an unreasonable safety risk.
Right, but the story obviously didn't end there. Years later, in early 2025, you have this focused group of consumer complaints, just 38 VOQs, but specifically reporting actual detachment of the trim while driving that catches the attention of NHTSA. And that prompts a formal regulatory inquiry directed at Ford, specifically concerning the 2016-2017 models.
And that inquiry then triggered Ford's own formal investigation by their Critical Concern Review Group. An investigation which, as we learned, involves some pretty intriguing methods like analyzing actual Explorer doors recovered from scrapyards, alongside reviewing years of warranty data and photos. And that investigation ultimately pinpointed the root cause. A specific manufacturing flaw described as improper application of the adhesive wetout during the original assembly process for those particular model years.
Exactly. And that definitive finding then led directly and fairly quickly to the decision by Ford's Internal Field Review Committee to issue this full-scale safety recall, which now covers over 492,000 of those 2016 and 2017 Explorer models. The key facts to remember: nearly 500,000 vehicles, those specific model years, it's the exterior B-pillar trim caused by a manufacturing adhesive issue. And importantly, based on the source, Ford stated they were not aware of any accidents or injuries directly related to this specific problem, at least as of early April 2025. And the remedy is still pending, with owners being notified in two stages.
You know, understanding the detailed process behind a recall like this, seeing how an issue can evolve over time from maybe a minor service bulletin item to a full-blown safety recall investigation, often sparked by just a handful of specific consumer reports, learning about the sort of forensic methods used to track down the manufacturing cause, and understanding the staged notification process for owners, because the fix takes time to develop and deploy it. It really does make you a more informed vehicle owner and just more informed consumer in general, doesn't it? It kind of shows how these complex systems involving manufacturers, regulators, and owners are designed to work, albeit sometimes slowly, in response to issues that inevitably arise in the real world.
I agree. It pulls back the curtain a bit on the sometimes opaque process of automotive safety oversight and these large recall campaigns. It shows it's not always about some sudden catastrophic failure making headlines. Sometimes it's about a known, maybe lower level issue that escalates due to accumulating evidence, pattern recognition, and ultimately regulatory review and manufacturer investigation.
Absolutely. Thinking back over the whole story as presented in the source, what stands out most to you? Is it maybe the jump from just 38 complaints to a recall affecting nearly 500,000 vehicles, or maybe the scrapyard detective work involved in the investigation, or perhaps that estimated 4% actual defect rate within that massive recall population?
That's a good question. For me, I think the really pivotal element that's highlighted in the source material is that specific moment when NHTSA steps in, prompted directly by those 38 specific consumer reports about actual detachment while driving, It really seems like that was the critical catalyst. That was the point that shifted this issue definitively from being just a repair procedure covered by a TSB for dealers into a mandatory safety recall investigation requiring Ford to find the root cause and take broad corrective action. It just powerfully illustrates the potential impact, the leverage that individual vehicle owners can have when they report problems they experience directly to the safety regulators.
That's a fantastic point. And, you know, that leads us perfectly into a final thought-provoking question for you, our listener, to consider a question drawn directly and only from the narrative presented in the source material we've explored together today.
This entire recall story, one that was initiated years after Ford first became aware of a related underlying issue and apparently escalated significantly by a relatively small number of very specific consumer complaints reaching the regulator. It really raises an important question about the safety system as a whole, doesn't it?
It does. What does this story tell us about the essential and perhaps sometimes underestimated power that individual vehicle owners like you possess? The power you have simply by diligently observing and then taking the step to report potential safety issues you encounter with your own vehicles? And how crucial can that seemingly simple act be in prompting significant safety actions like this massive recall that ultimately protect a much wider population of drivers?
It suggests that your careful observation and your willingness to take a few minutes to file a report can be a truly vital component in the complex chain of automotive safety and quality control.
Something to think about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.